This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hi, it's Elise Lunan, host of Pulling the Thread. I'm an author, podcast host, and parent who built a long career in media. I grew up in a state of perpetual curiosity, investigating the world and asking a lot of questions. In this show, I chat with culture-defining leaders, thinkers, and experts about this rare moment that we find ourselves in and how to think about our own lives and experiences within a larger social and spiritual construct.
When I would witness somebody that I identify with in whatever capacity of what I'm calling in, have what I want or are successful in what I would like to be successful in, or, you know, they are on that path to what I'm shooting for, I really realized that that would actually be tremendously more effective for my subconscious to go, oh, if they could do that, or if they are doing that, I can as well. So beyond all of the visualizing I did back in the day until I was blue in the face, this would speed things up and make it really rapid.
So says Lacey Phillips, my guest today, a global manifestation expert and speaker and founder of To Be Magnetic. Lacey presents a unique manifestation formula rooted in basic psychology, neuroscience, and her energetic gifts. Lacey's manifestation formula is not your typical think positive and visualize method, but rather, she's known for a much deeper and more therapeutic process that requires clearing subconscious blocks first. Only then can you begin to call in and work toward what you most desire. Lacey offers a comprehensive digital workshop program called The Pathway, along with an excellent podcast, Expanded. I highly recommend tuning in. Today, she shares with us the secrets of her manifestation success as we discuss everything from identifying our sticky subconscious beliefs to reading our nervous system and its readiness for change to how to respond to tests on the way to rediscovering our authentic, worthy self. Lacey tells us that seeing is believing when it comes to manifestation and encourages us to search for expanders, individuals, real or fictitious, who can broaden our concept of reality. She challenges us to turn our envy towards those who have what we want, using them as proof positive that what we want is not only possible, but achievable. Everyone is being offered a ticket on the manifestation train, she assures us. It's just a matter of whether we choose to get on. I'm actually a very good manifester, but where I always get stuck, which I like, I really credit you with putting people through these paces, is I never, growing up or even in my adult life, have ever really given consideration to what I actually want or need, and those being two distinct categories. And so I feel like the manifesting aside, which I want to get into, what I am so impressed by what you guys focus on is that core identification. We talked about this before, the role of envy, of finding these expanders in your life and reframing that as examples of how to take these micro steps or big steps forward. But like, what would you say is foundational? Is it that like understanding that actual desire? Because I know you yourself had so many trajectories and hit walls, and now you are where you are.
It's really interesting. And I guess to give just the teensiest bit of backstory, which I kind of like to preface, because the way that I even came about with expanders is I tried the old New Age model of manifestation for so long, you know, and many of us who are in that world are familiar with think positive, fake it until you make it, vision boards, all of that stuff. And I really did it. But the key components that I found that were so important is we manifest from our subconscious. That's huge. So getting back to that piece, I started to realize through mirror neurons and neuropsychology, essentially, I kind of, you know, I like to mix those two things together, that I realized that when it comes to triggers and blocks and our subconscious imprinted belief system that we developed between 0 to 7, as a lot of us know from simple psychology, that when it came to actually manifesting, a really core piece rather than visualizing, you know, what you wanted into existence, which I think, you know, there's a lot of science behind that, that that's a really wonderful practice. But for me, it was actually when I would, my mirror neurons, I would meet people and I would see people that I identified with in one, you know, variation to another. So it could be how I grew up socioeconomically. It could be professionally. It could be age, you know. So it's not just they are identical to me. We call them fragment expanders. It can be aspects of what I'm manifesting. When I would witness somebody that I identify with in whatever capacity of what I'm calling in, have what I want, or are successful in what I would like to be successful in, or, you know, they are on that path to what I'm shooting for, I really realized that that would actually be tremendously more effective for my subconscious to go, oh, if they could do that, or if they are doing that, I can as well. So beyond all of the visualizing I did back in the day until I was blue in the face, this would speed things up and make it really rapid. And the other piece to it that I think is really healing in our society, which you and I talked about a lot on my podcast, is it really took me out of the space. I call it, I think my friends and I, a lot of us call it psychic static that I think women can have amongst each other. And that's a really big thing that we're taught, I think, in society, to be pitted against each other or to compare amongst one another. I started to realize that a lot of that faded for me because I started to take envy and completely reframe it and look at these people that I'm triggered by and realize, oh, the piece that I'm triggered by, either it's shadow, there's something in myself that I need to integrate, and I'm witnessing what we call expanders, or I'm actually witnessing completely and clearly a person that I desire to have what they have. So expanders completely transformed not only women relationships for me and the way that I, you know, see the world and view the world, but it really has sped up healing for me as well. That, you know, I now, when I realize I'm being triggered by something, that there is a piece inside of me that is receiving a gift, a mirror, like we talk about a lot in spirituality. I'm receiving this reflection, you know, through this amazing other being on the planet that's either showing me what I can have or what I want or what I'm growing into as a person, or they're showing me the work that I need to do to integrate within myself. So it's so beautiful. And when you kind of start to go into this lane of manifestation that's really based on neuroscience and psychology, it really takes a lot of that ambiguous gray area out of the picture. It's something you can work with. You know what I mean? And so I love, you know, I always talk about there are three things that have to be in motion to manifest. It's unblocking your subconscious limiting beliefs that you imprinted, expanding through expanders, and really showing your subconscious, aha, that's possible. And then the third part is what we call aligned action. So taking action, you know, to show the self-worth piece, the integrated piece. That's what creates true magnetism. And so the piece of expanders is so big and probably the one that feels a little gray, but I feel like all of us who scroll on Instagram can find expanders within minutes, because most often than not, something will trigger us or something will inspire us. And either of those feelings, they're all relating back to the same thing, which is expansion.
Oh, there's so much powerful stuff to unpack in what you just said. I mean, first, this, the way that women are raised, which is typically on a diet of scarcity, of opportunity, you know, seats at the table, roles. We are trained that if there's room for one, that's it. Sometimes mm-hmm. there's not even tokenism. It's tokenism, right? But that invariably were each other's enemies, rather than seeing all of those other seats as potentially available to us. We've sort of been trained into this idea that it's you or me, Lacey. We can't both have abundance or the lives that we want. So I love that just sort of reframe of like, actually, this is the toxic myth that we continue to enforce and abide by that needs to be dismantled. So I think that that's really powerful. I think too, this idea of these limiting self-conscious beliefs, which get in the way. I mean, I do a lot of work with my subconscious beliefs, in part because it is that, again, it's that whether it's internalized patriarchy or just internalized, who do you think you are? But that instinct that we have to sort of be like, that's not possible for me, without really examining why.
And that it runs on auto. And that's also, you know, biologically so unhelpful of how much work goes into changing your neural pathways and how simply they're imprinted so quickly and easily, and especially young childhood. I mean, I watch it with my infant, you know, she's 9 months old, and I'm watching in real time where in her book, we're opening it up and you see an apple, and then, you know, she sees an apple on the table, and then she feels it at the store, and just how quick those neurons are firing and moving. And imagine any of us, all of us, all openly say, felt some version of shame or pain or very big versions of that throughout childhood. And then now we're having to really wrestle with that. And something that's been coming up for me lately, based on what you're talking about exactly, I think about this a lot, because as someone who has been chipping away at my subconscious, I'd say for at least 12 years now, consistently and consciously, and then has been expanding, you know, so much work to do. I think that'll be a journey forever for many people. But there's something that's been coming up for me a lot lately. And this is an interesting conversation, you know, may it be patriarchy, which I imagine it kind of has to be. I was walking down my front steps the other day, and I was like, what would my life look like? What would I desire if I hadn't been shown any structure at all? You know, like everything that society says is structurally makes you happy. And I was thinking, you know, we have a house, we have the family, we have the dogs, you know, like this really quintessential, well, this is happy. We have the success, you know, we are in the place now monetarily, like we're comfortable. And I'm like, great. But who would I be? You know, what would my partner desire? What would we desire as humans if none of that had been fed to us? That's been such a big question coming up. And I know that you've done so much research on, you know, different societies through the beginning of time. I mean, does that ever come up for you? What would that be if we weren't in all of our like ticky-tacky boxes? Like, that's something I've been really philosophizing on.
When I was in my early 20s, and let's just say not living my best life, my late brother-in-law and best friend, Peter, took me to France. Ostensibly, we were going to see and stay with his aunt, but really, I think he wanted to cheer me up. We went to the flea markets in the countryside on the weekends, where I found a set of very old religious medals. I decided to invest these medals with the belief that everything in my life could shift, and it did. I figured out how to frame them myself very badly, and they've stayed with me ever since. When Peter passed away in 2017, these medals became even more important to me, earning pride of place next to my desk. I look at them every day. But my poor framing job from 2002 started to fail recently, and so I decided to entrust them to Framebridge. I've been having Framebridge frame all of my family photos for years. You can upload digital prints, and they do a beautiful and speedy job, making them the perfect place for holiday gifts, as my mother-in-law and parents treasure photos of my kids. But Framebridge also takes on objects that are typically expensive and difficult to frame, whether it's menus, tickets, original artwork, personal milestones, license plates, hotel keys, keys to your first home, or in my case, medals. You can easily order online at framebridge.com or visit one of their 20-plus Framebridge retail stores. They provide free, secure, prepaid packaging for physical items, and you can ship them on over. They will then frame your piece and ship it to you in days. It's easy. It's affordable. You know exactly what it will cost up front, and they offer every conceivable framing option. Everything I've ever sent Framebridge has always looked even better than I expected. Plus, if you're not 100% happy with your piece, they'll make it right. See why Framebridge has been trusted to frame over 2 million pieces. Visit framebridge.com or a local Framebridge store to get started and custom frame just about anything. That's framebridge.com. I think that the core tenets that you just mentioned are what make us human, right? Mm-hmm. The desire for connection and love and to be seen and to feel supported in how we're designed and the gifts that we're designed to bring. You know, I think the way that people's sort of inner gifts have been thwarted or suppressed is a tragedy, really. I think that we're all, you know, we are all part of this web of reciprocity. And it's particularly in this strange time, like we're all being called to sort of serve our purpose. It could be in parenthood. It could be in the wider world. And again, we're like obviously trained to compare and contrast who has it better, or whose job is more important. But I think that our heritage is this affiliative partnership style, cyclical, like you come in, maybe you come in and you do your thing for a while and then you retreat. But this supportive community that I do think love, family, procreation, like all of these things are core to who we are, mm-hmm. as is survival and safety and security.
Completely.
And I think, yeah, like and I think that collectively, when we were involved in like a time of mutual dependence and mutual aid, a lot of those concerns were taken care of. It's always so interesting to me that people talk about the stress of modern day and then they sort of compare it to like fear of lions and tigers. Because when you think about it,
yeah.
you would think that our forebears would be the most terrified, right? Like the idea of that is so terrifying. And yet,
I mean, we have even hunting and gathering, like, right. or like first farmers, you know, not a crop completely, you know, going bad. You have nothing to eat. Like right. that's stressful.
But, you know, before we were agrarian, when we were nomadic, when we were yeah. gathering, primarily foraging, et cetera, apparently we were not as stressed. And
wow.
I find that really interesting. Well, I think that we talk about sort of the modern, acute modern stress as like somehow greater or more significant than our ancestors. But I think part of it was that we were all doing life together. So like if I couldn't find any berries, Lacey, like you did find berries, and we parented in an allo parenting style and raised children communally. It's not that Teddy wouldn't be yours primarily, but that there were a lot of other people to take care of her. And
absolutely.
So I think that's who we really are. And we're really stuck in this cult of independence, rugged individualism. It is your job to go out and figure out how to do it all yourself and parent in these nuclear family ways. And structure is important. And we need markets. We need all of this stuff. It's
sure,
not like
sure.
a let's all just go back to the wild. But
yeah.
it is, it's become bent and oppressive and very scarcity based
mm-hmm.
when we also recognize like actually we live on a planet of abundance. It's
totally.
Being distorted by like extreme disparities in wealth in a way that is not appropriate. Like, and then I, you know, obviously we won't get into politics, but it's this idea, it's like we need a little bit more socialism. I'm not saying mm-hmm. we're going to be communists, but like mm-hmm, we need mm-hmm. to be taking care of each other. That is who we are. That is the point. So anyway, that's what I think that it would look like. I think it would look like the safety, those deep safety and security issues abated, and all of us actually doing this really important work, which is very hard, which is
yeah.
like, who am I?
Yeah.
What do I want and need? And what am I, how can I serve?
Yeah, absolutely. That's so, I love this conversation because what you're touching on is true abundance, right? Like getting back to manifestation, that is true abundance. And even as someone who I would myself, I would now label as being very abundant in all of the ways. I like recognizing my privilege completely across the board, from, you know, having a home to just food and all the, all the privileges. I really recognize that I have all of those, you know, and I see even people in our community who are also landing in that spot, you know, through this work. And so I look at it and it's like, I guess a bigger question that's been coming up for me lately is, are these conversations where it's like, how do we start in our small communities now, like making the greater changes, you know? So I guess there are two things here that I'm sort of coming up on to create this conversation, but it's like, number one, you know, getting something we're constantly looking at is trying to be accessible to allow people to get into the space of playing with manifestation, playing with energetics and abundance, you know, and that's through, truthfully, a lot of self-healing, expansion, and then taking action, aligned action that aligns with their worth and really setting them up into a position of whatever that looks like for them, individual abundance. Okay. And then let's take the people who are arriving in that, you know, how do we start to use that abundance? Like, what actions are you taking right now? And I know obviously these conversations, they're so important, but that's something that's been coming up for me lately. Like, what is the next step in order to let this be a complete ripple effect, you know? And I don't quite know what that is yet. It hasn't hit me. I haven't channeled it yet, but it is something I continue to philosophize, especially as our brand grows, especially as we continue to reach, you know, bigger people and have different tiers of, you know, people who are just starting and just doing the subconscious unblocking and the healing and the work, to the people who are now like advanced in it. They're also asking, okay, what's next? You know, and I would say specific with our community, we're one of the few that I think who are in manifestation that aren't like, how to manifest a yacht. Like, it's so not that at all. It's all about like your authentic self and integration and what that looks like for you. So I guess there are quite a few things in there, but that's something, those are things I've been thinking about. And I'm like, oh, I want to talk to Elise about those.
I love these ideas. And I think, you know, the not wanting to manifest a yacht, it's like, again, that's the arrival fallacy that so many of us are trained on. Like, well, if I just had a bigger house, and if I just and like, that is such a myth. I think many people are arriving at that, like, what, and again, it gets to this, what are your needs and what are your wants? And I think for most of us, if we can satisfy our needs, which is that safety, security, and feeling a purpose, like, that's pretty rad. Like, that's pretty much, you know, typically, I think what's deeply satisfying to most people, at least that's how I felt in my life. You know, I think what we're going through collectively, a great awakening. And some people have been awake for longer and clamoring for everyone else to wake the fuck up and are understandably impatient about that. I think that we're starting to, just even in the last 5 years, 10 years, really see and have these conversations. Again, many that are decades old, but that are really going into mass consciousness about what is this system? And like, what are these systemic inequities? And how, what are we carrying forward? You know, you look again at the arc of humanity, and it's like, we are, might not feel that way, but becoming far less, you know, more and more humane and evolved and less barbaric and horrible to each other over time. But these are, you know, in this book that I'm writing about and sort of trying to get through some of the history of the patriarchy as quickly as possible in a way that people can really like grok without
digest
without drowning them in it.
Totally.
But the foundation of patriarchy is enslavement, and it is women and children. And we were the one, we were the first to be sort of otherized. It happened when, like, within the conquering of tribes. And that's where the art of enslavement was refined and perfected, and where women were fed this idea that we are inherently inferior, where that idea became that we are less weak, or we are weaker and less powerful. That's where that idea became natural. And then that was the system of oppression, as we know, used until recently, right? Mm-hmm. And there's still variations of this happening throughout the world. We're not in like a post-enslavement world.
Oh, yeah.
And, but it has incredibly long teeth. And obviously we're seeing that now in terms of reparations and understanding like how a lack of equity defines a world that we think for so many, we were always taught like, oh, you know, even Frederick Douglass, right, talking about like, oh, well, this is a meritocracy and hard work and that sort of Puritan, that work ethic will serve you well, anyone. And now mm-hmm. we're sort of recognizing the mythology of that. So I feel like we're waking up to all of this and people mm-hmm. are sort of starting to see the structure. And then once we see the structure, we can start to, it's like a meta subconscious belief system, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so, but once we start to see these things and bring them into awareness, we can start to address them mm-hmm. and reject them mm-hmm. and heal them, solve them, integrate it, metabolize it. So I feel like that's collectively also what's happening, everything on the micro to the macro. And I think that we're also seeing a great call around like the democratization of healing and how essential this is for all of us.
Mm-hmm. Accessibility.
Like yeah. Like you're only as well as your least well child. Like we're only as well as our least well citizen. So I feel optimistic that we're actually now starting to understand the playing board. And I think, you know, going back to manifestation, mm-hmm. these subconscious beliefs are sticky and deep. But do you, in your experience, and obviously you've workshopped so many people through this now, how quickly can they, once they're identified and like brought to air, how quickly do they resolve?
It's really interesting because when we brought in right now, you know, we have a wonderful neuroscientist psychiatrist that we work with, and we've had many podcast episodes. We title the series Explained. And so we hop on and we really talk about like the neuroscience and psychology of, and that's usually what I'm getting at because I'm very result based when it comes to manifestation. Maybe that's my wounded inner child. It's like, want to see results that, you know, I want to fix. And so a lot of, you know, the conversation is, you know, like really talking through neural pathways and healing through, you know, anything to do with psychology. And it's fascinating because everybody's different, but we did kind of really work deeply with her to create a system within what we have as our daily practice, you know, and it's all through hypnosis, like a very specific version that we do in house. And then she really taught us some key things that had to happen to create the neural pathways quicker, you know, and it's things like action after. It was humongous. It's just so fast. So like, let's say you go in and you get to the subconscious, you pull it forward in these hypnosis and you really find the root memory. And, you know, we reprogram is what we call it. It doesn't mean that you're changing the memory. It means that you're changing the emotion surrounding the memory that happened from disempowered to empowered, essentially. And then from that, you know, it's things like the journaling, but she really taught us that you have to follow up and reread your journal prompts. So she's taken things to a whole nother level to help that go faster. But it's fascinating because what I find, you know, I'm simply the person in-house that can read energetics and channel this, you know, system. But I think it really depends on how ready you are for change, like how ready you are to, how ready your nervous system is for change. So that can look so different for many people, you know, and getting back to what we're talking about, like, I'm already in a privilege, even though I grew up with two young parents and, you know, I have a story and I had a big lack mentality, et cetera, but simply being a white female in the areas I grew up, I mean, I already inherently had, I would say, a nervous system that was more open, more relaxed. So it really depends, I think, on people's trauma, where they come from, the stories that were imprinted in them of what's possible, not only in life, but in healing. Like what's really possible in happiness and a calm nervous system and a healthy body, a healthy mind. So I think that's one piece, like how open is your nervous system? How ready is it? And I think that we have not a great deal of control over that, but I think we have a great deal of identifying where our nervous system is, you know, because some of us, if we're really, really deep in our trauma still, we always recommend like do the side by side with a therapist, do this with a support group if you can't afford a therapist, et cetera. But based on that, you know, we tend to have an idea like, if I'm still really deep in my trauma and I haven't addressed any of it, a lot of our nervous system and our subconscious is going to be very closed off. It's kind of like a shell, you know, it's like a clam. It's like, no, no, no. Because if I open up, there's a lot of pain there. So I think to me, what I've witnessed working with many people, how ready is your nervous system? You know, where are you at on that scale? So it's not like, how ready are you for your manifestation to come through? It's truly like, how ready are you to go on this journey to fully open up, to open up Pandora's box and look in and clean out the cobwebs and start to give yourself a hug and change everything? So that's one piece. And then the second piece is how expanded are you and how self-aware are you? You know, so getting back to that conversation earlier about expanders, some people can be so deep in their shadow. I've been there before, where when you witness somebody who has what you want or are successful in what you want, it can be extremely triggering and it'll be so hard to get past that and do the work, which we show you of how to find that to be actually really expansive for your subconscious. So also to give just a little bit of history to people with the expander piece, you know, which is the second really big part of this process. If we are deep in our shadow, you know, in the way I think many people listening to this are familiar with shadow, anytime that we experience shame or pain growing up, often we took that aspect. So say, you know, and I'll give a very surface level example, but say when I'll give a personal example, and this is extremely surface level, but it shows. And I think this highlights, you know, things we've been talking about. But I remember walking into a store one day and there was a woman walking in front of us and she had a lot of cellulite on her legs. And my mom pointed it out and she said, if you don't stop eating the way you've been eating, you'll look like that. So that's a really good example. I know. And like, this is like patriarchy in a nutshell, like the most like obvious example of that. But I remember going, oh, if I look like that, I'm not lovable. And that's a really good example in a very surface, non-emotionally charged version of, okay, cool. Well, then if I look like that, I need to put that into my shadow. So what that means is like, pieces of us that we have disassociated from either through witnessing somebody being shamed and going, oh, if I behave the way that person's behaving and these people who are supposed to love me and I'm supposed to feel safe around are judging that person, I better do everything to not be anything like that person. Because getting back to the crux of society, love and connection is humongous for survival, right? That's still how I think we're biologically programmed. So kind of like rounding back to my earlier conversation, how much are we willing to open up our shadow and go, oh, a lot of this isn't my story. A lot of this was programmed into me either through media, through familial, through societal, through, I like to say like educational at school. I picked up a lot of stuff there through this work, you know, especially in public school and stuff like that. So how willing are we to go, anytime I'm triggered by something outside of me, if I start to take accountability, and I don't mean if you've gone through like massive trauma that you're saying it's my fault. That's not at all what I mean. But the way that I like to propose it is if I'm wanting to heal and I'm wanting to start expanding and unblocking subconscious beliefs, how willing am I to take my power back by saying, look, if I have control over this experience, you know, like I'm going to take accountability that thing that happened, I'm actually going to take my power back by opening up and starting to shift and transform that, which we call integrating our shadow. That those two sectors are going to really, really determine how quickly I think someone's subconscious can shift. So how open is your nervous system? How open am I and willing to integrate my shadow? Because one is going to unblock your subconscious limiting beliefs, which we teach in manifestation is literally the wall that keeps your manifestation from coming through. It's literally saying, please stay away from me. You're not safe and I can't have you. So whether it's love or money or, you know, it could be something just like self-worth. There's something inside of you that you picked up very specific instances of trauma. And it can be, when I say trauma, some people are like, but I had the best childhood. And I had this experience, and I'll give this example. When I was doing a speaking tour, I was in London and I met up with a friend's friend. We all had dinner, you know, after, and she was this very successful woman. She had exited her company, you know, like really on fire from a business standpoint. And she was like, I can't understand why I haven't found like the loving relationship that I really desire. And so I'm like, cool, let's open up and just very briefly and quickly look at your childhood. And she was like, oh, my parents had the best relationship. They're still together today. They're so compatible. And I'm like, awesome. Did they have the relationship that you want? And she's like, oh God, no, my mom was a stay-at-home mom. It was like, you know, it was like she could never follow her dreams. My dad was very successful. And I was like, right. So when you were little, looking out of your lens at your parents' relationship, you were like, oh, that's a jail. Like I literally, for my own personal authentic self, like that looks like I would be really stuck in a cage. So in your world, you've done everything in your adult life to get away from that. Like you've become so successful. You've exited your company. You're, you know, you're like starting all these other companies, but you're single because still subconsciously your small child is thinking that the imprintation that she witnessed of her parents, that's what love has to be or a relationship has to be. And it's like, you have to expand out of that. So I was like, how many other women do you know like yourself that are in relationships that you desire? And she's like, none. I was like, cool. So your subconscious has literally never seen an expander that's like you and has a relationship that you desire. So right now your subconscious, when it comes to love, literally has the wall up, which we call blocks that's saying like, stay back. This isn't what I want. It's not safe because it's still running on that, you know, programming that's what a relationship has to be. So that really shows really clearly how one would have to unblock and how open are you to integrating, you know, and expanding, you know, and really, really going out there and finding and showing your subconscious for the first time, oh, for my personal authentic self, this is what would be right for me. So it kind of like, that's a very long-winded, you know, explanation to tell you. It can happen very quickly based on those two factors, or it can take time if you're not ready, if you're, you know, your nervous system is not ready to open up to all of that, or if you haven't had the right support to make you feel safe to be able to do that, or the right community, you know, and that's a huge part of our program is community. Huge, huge, huge.
Oh, I think it's a really powerful example.
I'm Bobby Finger.
And I'm Lindsay Weber.
Do you ever see a new face or name on your news feeds and say, who the heck is that?
Our podcast, Who Weekly, is everything you need to know about the celebrities you don't. Think of us as your cheat code to People Magazine, your glossary for Hollywood, a shortcut to understanding pop culture at large.
For the past 8 years, Who Weekly has been telling listeners everything they need to know about the celebrities they don't. The New Yorker says we spelunk deep into the demimonde with convivial delight. That's a direct quote.
Mostly, we're going to explain to you Irish star Barry Keoghan's sudden rise to fame and relationship with a not-so-under-the-radar pop princess named Sabrina.
The fake wedding Real Housewives star Cynthia Bailey had to promote a limo rental company.
And why all the Gen Zers you know are talking about a guy named Benson Boone.
Each episode goes deep into the biggest celebrity stories of the moment. And if you're still confused, we even have a weekly call-in episode where we answer the most burning celebrity queries.
Who Weekly airs twice weekly with brand new episodes on Tuesdays and Fridays. Listen and follow Who Weekly, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
I was at this retreat with this woman, Krissa Schumacher, who I work with, who channels Yeshua. She's amazing. In a retreat when she was channeling, this woman, we had submitted questions and this older woman was like, why haven't I had a relationship? And why haven't I been able to attract a relationship? And Yeshua Krissa was like, you guys and your law of attraction, not the law. What I would ask you is, what are you repelling?
How are you repellent?
What is it that you are, this isn't about attracting and if I want it, I'll make it. So, it goes back to the sort of how you open with the way that manifestation has been taught which also make people paranoid, right? Because you're scared of your own thoughts, your own conscious thoughts of like,
we can have a very long conversation about that.
Right. Like if I think that it's going to come true and, but yeah, it goes to exactly what you were saying about what is it in you that's repellent? And that's the work. That's the work.
100%.
In the concept of expanders, you talk about fragment expanders. I've heard sort of your checklist, but what are the like you might not want anything about, you might only want one tiny
yes.
part, right? But you can still knit together what it would look like for you.
Yeah, I think this is a really big deal in the work because I know when I initially launched on my own, people were like, I live in a small town. How do I find, you know, this person that inhabits all of these qualities? And that's where I started to, you know, and what I talk about with manifestation and my gift of channeling, I can read energetics and I'm a claircognizant. So it's actually kind of tricky because I just know things. And it took me many years to trust that I don't get to hear, I don't get to see. I have like very small abilities in that, but mine is just knowing, which is really hard to hone down. And once I did, it's like reading the energetics of manifestation started to feel like, the way I can put it kind of into material terms, it's like when you're just sort of touching silk like this, you learn how to feel into certain energetic pieces. And one of them, I started to go, okay, there's such a thing as fragment expanders. And why that analogy that I just gave matters is because you can start to feel into on social media while watching TV. Maybe people are watching TV. I think it's a great place to find expanders because our subconscious is completely on automatic during that time. It comes forward. We're in a hypnotic state watching TV, you know? So if you throw on a movie that say, there's nothing about this rom-com that you identify with, except for the version of the two best friends in it, their dynamic. And you've been really trying to manifest community. And I say rom-com because it's lighthearted, you know, it's not too heavy. And so you're really, really identifying and you're in the subconscious hypnotic state. Your subconscious is imprinting in real time. Oh, wow, that's possible. And I'll give a little example of this. My astrologer, who I've been great friends with for years, had been really trying to manifest a partner. And she's from, you know, like the Upper East Side of New York, et cetera, had always attracted these men like her father, like very powerful older men. And she started watching Sons of Anarchy, which was kind of off brand for her. And she had this like very visceral experience with one of the characters on it where, and we do live in LA, where she was like, am I supposed to be with him? I was like, you'd be surprised how often I hear this and this happens. Maybe, I don't know, but the odds are slim. So I think he might be married. The odds are slim. But anyway, what you're witnessing is your soul is finally communicating for the first time to you, where you're really listening to what it the experience desires. And what that was, you know, it was like somebody who was younger and rugged and could like, you know, just like walked on the wild side, had an accent, you know, just so different, playful, you know, a little dark, a little bit light, you know, complex. And so I was like, and I could tell where she was at in her process. She was very, very, very close to calling in her partner. Literally the next week, she walks into Rose Cafe and a guy with the same type of accent who had just gotten off of his motorbike with his helmet in hand walked up and asked her out. I mean, almost identical to this character. And it's such a good example of, you know, and that's like, not she was witnessing for the first time like a very big expander, but there are fragments and you can get those from anywhere. And so one term that we've coined recently on one of these explained episodes is there are also bridge expanders. So like, let's take the person who is trying to call in a completely different career, you know, once the pandemic hit, when I was explaining and channeling at the top of it from an energetic level of why it was a blessing in many people's lives was it's taking any of us that are in a rut or not on our aligned path. And it's knocking us right off of that, whether we like it or not, like that's, it's bringing into focus what our soul desires and maybe how close we are to that or how far away we are from that based on these societal models we've been fed that we have to do to be happy. And so a big piece of that was a lot of people were changing careers, right? They were starting podcasts, they were starting new entrepreneurial endeavors and really kind of listening to themselves for the first time and had the ability at home, may it have been, you know, that they were receiving. I think my assistant told me she received a severance. You know, she had finally the first time in her life, she could just be at home and do what she wanted. And so the beauty of that, let's say you're manifesting a whole separate career during that time, where you are now and what I would get in my practice a lot when I was working one-on-one with people, I would say a very big percentage were lawyers. They would come to me and they're like, I hate my career and I hate my job. And that's not to say all lawyers do. Some people really get into the right profession, but many of them, you know, it was the road that was fed to them. Like, if you do this, you're lovable, you know, and you'll be secure and you'll be set. You're kind of hitting those things that you talked about, safety, security, but the lack potentially of purpose. And I think purpose is such a humongous driver for mental health, in my opinion. And that's, you know, a very brass thing to say, because I'm not a mental health expert, but the work I've done with people, purpose, which I like to call what your soul desires, is tremendous for happiness, tremendous. So long-winded, but let's just take, you know, that person who's maybe a lawyer and they're like, I want to be a yoga instructor. I mean, whatever the thing is, it could be anything. I want to be a fishing, you know, coach, I don't know, whatever the thing is, but you're so far away from success in that different, you know, field that I tell people it's so important to go find bridge expander. So who is a person that you identify with who has gone on and completely changed careers? And maybe they're at the midpoint of that success. It doesn't have to mean that they're in the exact career you want. It's just to show the mechanics in your subconscious, to open up that clock and look for the first time and see the mechanics inside and how they work. Because if you are somebody who went from, like, let's say, taking the bar, becoming an associate after a couple of internships, is, you know, like a legal whatever, now you've been in a firm and your whole trajectory is just to keep climbing and, you know, doing better until you become a partner. Not one aspect of that, I don't know, I've never been a lawyer, but to me, not one aspect of that really cries entrepreneurship, right? So it's like, you have to go and find what we call bridge or fragment, or if you're lucky enough to have somebody in your life that you identify with, who's completely in the other career that you want and is successful and is willing to maybe apprentice or show you to, again, open up those mechanics inside of your subconscious to go step 1, 2, 3, and 4 usually gets to this, and your subconscious goes, oh, whoa, if you did step one, I definitely get, like, that's a big piece I'll see with people. They'll have that aha moment where they'll say, if you could do that, I could definitely do that. That's when you know you found the right expansion. So that's such a big piece. And that's where it's like, you know, not to get back to the very first point I was making, but visualization can only take you so far, because who you're contending with when you're manifesting is your subconscious, period.
Yeah. It's sort of the only competition.
Literally the only competition.
Yeah. No, I think it's so powerful to think about the ways that we can use each other to embolden ourselves to dream bigger. And, like, that's what's required, I think, socially. And it's not a, again, not an either or, like a leapfrogging. It is a, you are showing me what's possible. And that's an amazing gift and not a threat. You talked about taking action. And so what does that look like?
Yeah. And so the aligned action piece, it can show up in many ways, but the energetic of it, that's so important, getting back to the three things that have to be in motion. It's unblocking, expanding, and then the aligned action. And so the aligned action can look a couple of different ways. And the what I believe in my own channeling, and again, that, like, a silky dancing with the universe, I believe that the greatest intention, you know, of why we're here, and I won't say that this is the biggest, but when it comes to manifestation, I think the greatest intention is getting back to our whole authentic, worthy selves, you know, that we literally, our souls were as it was, you know, I don't know, floating around our parents and about to take a body, like that energetic you know, integration. And I think through childhood, again, through media, society, familial, et cetera, we have a lot of imprintation of pain, you know, and shame and things that make us disassociate from that. And so the aligned action piece is all about anything you need to do directly that you can see with what you're calling in that will help you to get deeper into that aligned, authentic, worthy space. So for some people that can look like jumping off of a cliff. I mean, we have like very step-by-step through the process while you're doing this actionables, but it can look like, I know I'm in the wrong relationship and I'm calling in the right one. And it's like, what are the actions I need to take? A big piece of this is being tested, you know, and a lot of people never talked about this in manifestation. I started to see this pop up every time I was manifesting that I would be tested. And what that looks like, say calling in a new relationship. And let's say in the prior one, I had been kind of a doormat and I was dating the wrong people or, you know, whatever low self-worth behavior I was doing because of my own, you know, lack of unblocking yet. What will happen when we start to call in that new dating experience or new relationship that we're really desiring is the universe will be like, okay, cool. You know, what you're asking for, the aligned, authentic, worthy self of that person is here. And right now, the way you're behaving is here. And so what action needs to happen to communicate that like energetic resonance? And so what it'll often do is it'll send a dating experience that is very similar to your past experience, you know, and you have to go like, oh, I see what you're doing, universe, here. No, thanks. Passing this. And then it starts to get harder because, you know, what you'll be presented are experiences that are very close to your list and all of the things you're looking for, but say maybe emotionally unavailable. It's the person who it's like everything I called in, oh my gosh, this is my soulmate, et cetera. And then it's like, but they just communicated to me that they don't want anything serious if that's what I'm desiring. And so those are what we call tests. And so that aligned action piece is usually passing tests or taking any type of action you need. Getting out of an experience, pivoting an experience, et cetera, to show the universe and communicate, okay, I'm really getting on my path. Like I'm really in my worth.
Yeah. No, it's so true. I feel like those tests, they come fast and furious.
They
and then,
do.
And I really fail a lot of them where that's the phase I'm in right now where it's like I'm starting to really understand the dream that I have for myself, which is feels attainable. And then I'll continually make decisions based on fear and scarcity and busyness and distraction. And then I'm like, why am I giving up on myself? And you know,
but the beautiful thing is the moment that you, you know, even in those moments of say busyness, like you didn't even have it within you to like sit down and get clear and say like, is this intentional with what I want in my bigger picture? You know, like, let's just say it was busy. The beautiful thing is the universe just keeps sending tests. Just know it. You can't fail. There's just another opportunity. And I like to say, it's kind of like the carrot being dangled where it's like, are you going to go after the carrot or you're going to go, it's cool, I'll eat this instead, which is right for me. And that's when the universe goes, oh, finally.
It's so true. I love your program. I think it's so powerful. And I think too, like I have this tendency, and it's, again, it goes back to the social programming of like, blame the mother, blame the parents, like someone to blame. And so much of this has outside of the family or it's intergenerational and you're carrying on patterns and it's no one's fault. It's just your responsibility to fix it for yourself.
Yeah. And like, that's the piece, you know, depending on where we are in our pain that I just love to say, like to reframe, the whole point is doing this work, like getting to a place where you're integrated enough where you take your power back. Like that's really rather than pointing fingers or, you know, it's really about empowerment, essentially, like, you know, even deep, deep traumas where you get to a point where you're like, wow, that person, like hurt people, you know, and it's in a way not their fault, you know? So when you start to get to that integrated place, a lot of the blame, you know, starts to fall. And I think that's where the true freedom is, you know, but it takes time and everybody has their process. And I like the last thing I sit around and do is blame my parents, because that's only, you're going to stay. It's the same thing as think positive. Like, you stay in the same comfortable zone forever. You don't push past it. And I do believe, like, we're here and we're headed in the direction of consciousness. If we're on the train, I think everybody's being offered the train, but it's like, in this lifetime, are we going to hop on it? And how far are we going to go? You know, what stops do we have along the way? And the beauty of it, the further you go on the train, the more freedom you have, the less that you feel those feelings anymore.
I have many friends who have done Lacey's workshops. She has many, sort of the main manifestation one, and then as well as other ones around this unblocking work. And I really think it's a powerful program. It's funny. She sort of was like, oh, I'm so results obsessed. But I love stuff like this that lives in the world that that people think of as being more woo-woo, where you can actually point to proof and get that assurance or reassurance that you're moving in the right direction. And if you can't tell, I am exceptionally enthusiastic about this idea of expanders and reframing the way that we tend to be taught to think about women who are modeling lives that we would like to have for ourselves, that it is always taught to us as an off with her head, when the reality is there is more than enough room and expansion and abundance available for all of us. Thanks for listening to this week's episode. You can find show notes and full transcripts of the episodes at theelisepodcast.com. Please sign up for my newsletter. I promise I won't spam you. Or follow me on Instagram at Elise Lunan to get updates on new episodes. I'd also like to give a huge thank you to my sponsors who make this show possible. Please support them the way they support this podcast. This has been a presentation of Cadence 13 Studio. If you enjoyed this episode, please listen, rate, review, and follow Pulling the Thread, available now for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Odyssey, or wherever you get your podcasts, i.e. wherever you're listening right now. I also want to thank you in advance for sharing any episodes with friends who you think might like the show, because that is how podcasts grow. I want to give a shout out to Phil Svitek, Lauren LaGrasso, Serena Reagan, Mary-Kate McDonough, and the entire Cadence 13 team for producing these episodes, and to Valero Duval for my key art. Take care of yourselves. I'll see you next week.